is their debut, and I think it was pretty much ignored at the time, this single. It wasn't until their next release that they were quickly discovered and given a lot of airplay in Australia. So this was put out here in this part of the world by DeSoto Records, and it's an EP called Ford Green Silver Rocket by a band called Pollyanna from Australia from the mid-90s, featuring the songwriting talents of Matt Handley. So let's get to this now. This is a little curiosity from the mid-90s from Australia. This is Pollyanna. Hope you enjoy.
We'll be right back. Hello, Vancouver. This is Carolyn Mark. You're listening to CITR 101.9 on your FM dial.
Yes, hello, Vancouver, and hello, rest of the world, whoever's listening, maybe online at citr.ca. We appreciate your listenership. I hope you enjoyed that. I picked that up because I found this through sheer chance while doing a search in the database for another act. This record came up, Pollyanna. We're a mid-90s band from Australia, and this was their debut single. Not as strong at all as the songs they became known for. So I'll dig up some of the more known singles for you in other weeks. They were a good band, really good pop rock indie music. Good songwriting from Matt Handley as the front man. That's a little taste for how they began as a band. So the band was called Pollyanna, and that was a single 7-inch called Ford Green Silver Rocket, and the B-side was called Grover Washington. And the band doesn't exist anymore as of 2002. And Matt Handley now, according to Wikipedia, is a guitar technician for Tame Impala and The Living End. So he's definitely still having a lot of fun in the music world. Okay, so it's time to move on to another interesting piece of vinyl that I brought all the way down on the bus today, and I'm incredibly excited to play it because this is a classic. It's the Dunedin Double LP. So Dunedin is a city in New Zealand on the South Island, a long, long, long way from where I'm sitting and a long way from most of everywhere in the world. But what's special about that city is that that's where the Flying Nun record label comes from. And for a certain period of time, that was one of the strongest places for independent music anywhere in the world, thanks to the curatorship of this great record label. And it pretty much started in March of 1982 with the release of the record I'm just about to play. It's called the Dunedin Double, and it's actually four bands all on the one record, actually two vinyl records, and they both are 45 RPM 12-inch discs. So each band had one side of one record. The bands were The Chills, The Sneaky Feelings, The Stones, and The Verlaines. So The Chills and The Verlaines are the two bands that went on to bigger and better things. But this is a really great document for how this sound, that the Flying Nun sound, started as a real fantastic lo-fi or an authentic lo-fi recording. So basically Chris Knox took along a portable four track to a couple of houses, and over a couple of weekends they recorded these songs. And I'm going to play you little snippets of some interviews I found online with a couple of the guys from these bands talking about how green they were. Like, they, at least one or two of these bands, had never been in front of a microphone, let alone any recording device, and it was really quick takes. And the results are fabulous. This is great lo-fi recording and pretty good songs. So anyway, I'm just going to play you first up. This is Ian Haig from The Chills talking about his experience there recording in 1982. And then I'm going to get to the LP. I'm going to play for you all the tracks from The Chills, and then I'm going to flip it over and play all the tracks from The Verlaines. So here we go. This is a New Zealander, Alan Haig of the band The Chills, talking about the classic recording sessions for the Dunedin Double EP.
Flying Nun Extended Play.
Chris Knox and his four-track tape machine. Love it. Still good. I think he's actually still got it. And we just sort of set the band up sort of in various places in the lounge, around the couch, around the TV, those sort of things, and away we go. So we had no idea what we were kind of doing. Another man there, Doug Hood, was involved with it as well. So Chris and Doug were basically looking after it, after the recordings, and sort of working out that we can record, you know, The Chills and The Stones and The Verlaines and Sneaky Feelings in the same sort of manner. It was just a fun time, really. it was all just sort of went so quickly, you know, and that sort of side of it, and drum kept falling over and just all sorts of crazy things, you know, propped up with cushions and, you know, you name it. So it was that, it was that sort of atmosphere. It was really, it was a homely atmosphere.
Okay, so that was a gentleman named Ian Haig from The Chills talking about the Dunedin Double EP from 1982, and it was re-released for Record Store Day 2014, and I grabbed a copy from Vinyl Records here in the city. So I'll be right back with a track or two from The Chills side of that EP, and then we'll get to the Verlaines as well. So keep listening in. I'll be right back.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Floating in a space capsule, I look at you. that your words run like summer rain down my face. Let your voice caress my mind like a loving touch. I'm not asking too much, I just don't want the worry of telling myself. Tell me a story,
tell me a story,
let me drift.
Tell me a story,
tell me a story,
frantic drift.
Let me rest in peace, or in pieces let me die. Just tell me I can survive, if you wanna keep me alive. Frantic drift, frantic drift, frantic drift, frantic drift. And you try to tell me about Jesus and your gods, but I've heard it all before. So I try, but I can't say anything new that makes me sick, but I'm still doing better than you. So I'll be alive in the future after the war, and tell me things will be better than before, and tell me tales of light and time and space, and tell me there'll be problems I can't face. I don't care if you're lying.
From June 18th to the 22nd, it's the 8th annual Sled Island Festival, featuring over 250 bands, films, artists, and comedians spread across 30-plus venues concentrated in the downtown core and surrounding areas of Calgary, Alberta. Featuring bands such as St. Vincent, Dan Deacon, Killer Mike, Rennie Wilson, and so much more. Passes are on sale now. For tickets and more information, go to sledisland.com.
Welcome back to the show. My name's Matt, and you're listening to Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music and Talk Show. And a real special treat for you today, because the last three songs you heard were from 1982. They were recorded in a rainy town called Dunedin in the southern island of New Zealand on a four-track in some folks' houses. Quintessential lo-fi recording from a quintessential lo-fi a label called Flying Nun. So this is it was a double EP, two pieces of 12-inch vinyl dedicated to four different bands over the space of 2 weekends, where a four-track was carried around between a few houses and pressed record, and some very, very inexperienced musicians, but very inspired people put what they could down on tape. So I picked up a copy of this reissue for Record Store Day. And I'm excited to play it for you because it's a bit of history. Flying Nun Records, of course, is a very well-established label now, and this is where it all began. So those three tracks were from The Chills on side A of the first LP. And next up, I'm going to play you the tracks that were recorded by the Verlaines, featuring the great songwriter Graham Downs. So I'm going to grab another snippet here online from Flying Nun, where they've quickly interviewed Graham. He's talking for a couple of minutes about his experience way back in 1982 recording these tracks. So here we go. This is Graham Downs of the Verlaines talking about the Dunedin Double EP.
Fly Nun extended play.
Roger had decided that this was releasing a record was a good idea. He saw, I think, most of the bands that were on the Dunedin Double. We came up to Christchurch and supported The Clean. And we travelled up with Sneaky Feelings, I think a week or two later, and did it at Rex Visible's flat on Barbados Street. Chris Knox with his four-track and Doug Hood operating it. We didn't have the faintest idea what we were doing. It was, considering we only had four tracks to work with, sort of actually made some kind of got a grasp on what the technology could do. We must have bounced some stuff down because there's two guitars, kind of lead guitars and the coda of You Cheat Yourself, that kind of follow each other around, the kind of informal canon, 19 years old or whatever, and kind of you've done it, and then just the rough mix gets played back to you, and it's kind of like, did we create that? Man, I want to do this for the rest of my life. It's just a huge buzz. Incredible.
Why? Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Okay, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music and talk show. And don't forget, if you're listening live, feel free to call through any time if you have a request, 604-822-2487, to come through to the CATR booth. I played a request last week for a gentleman who wanted some Hunters and Collectors, and that was a real pleasure. But that there was music from New Zealand, some lo-fi goodness from the classic Dunedin Double EP, which first came out in 1982, but it's been out of print for a long, long time until this year when it was re-released, repressed for Record Store Day 2014. So what was unique about it was two 12-inch discs that both spun at 45 RPMs and had four different bands on the four different sides. Chills, Sneaky Feelings, The Stones, and who you just heard there, The Verlaines, featuring Graham Downs, and the Verlaines have gone on to create incredible music over the years, as have the Chills. And so that was the EP that started it all for Flying Nun Records. Some lo-fi recordings recorded in some kitchens, bedrooms, just regular houses with a four-track in 1982 there in Dunedin. So I hope you enjoyed that. And I'll be playing some more New Zealand music, of course, in the weeks to come. But for now, it's time to get into the Australian music. And I should say, we do have an interview towards the end of the show, and it's quite unique. Not music-related at all, but I've actually interviewed a cousin of mine, Charlie Graydon, who is in town, and she is an author, a published author of a book called The Judgment Game, which was inspired by her many years working as a criminal lawyer. And she's here in Vancouver, and actually Victoria more specifically, for a book launch. And I wanted to interview her and ask her all about that book. So I did that in her hotel room a couple of days ago. So I'm going to be playing that towards the end of the show. Something very different for the show because it's not music related at all. It's more about criminal justice and the philosophy around, what the legal system's all about. So that'll be up before 7:30 p.m. Vancouver time. But right now it's Canadian Music Week, and there is a big contingent of Australian acts that are there right now, including this next artist named Ma Petite. Now she, that's her stage name. Her real name is Indiana Event, and she's quite unique because she's a Melbourne native, but she has lived in Vancouver. And I got to know her a little bit, actually, a year or so back. She was based here for a while, but now I guess she's more back living in Melbourne again. But she has returned just for the next month or two to tour, her first big tour as a solo artist through Western Canada. But it's kicked off in Toronto with the Canadian Music Week. So let's play a track from Ma Petite, from her record, The Road That Led Me to Fall. It's her debut after many years playing as a violinist for hire for all sorts of great artists like Dan Mangan and Bon Iver and Gautier even. So let's play Morning Song by Ma Petite, and she'll be playing in Vancouver at the Prop House Cafe on 16th of May, and then some dates in Kamloops and Kelowna and Chilliwack. So here we go. Here's Ma Petite, all the way from Melbourne, Australia, but with a strong Canadian connection. Upon my windowsill,
you see as I stirred from my night of dreaming? The sound comes alive. I open my eyes, and to my surprise, it is
Okay, so we're back on CITR Radio, and there are a couple of acts that are playing at the Canadian Music Week, and they're Australian acts who have made the visit all the way to this part of the world. So first up was Ma Petite. She is from Melbourne, and she's also got a connection to Canada because she lived in Vancouver for a time, and she's returning to do a Western Canada tour once she's wrapped up there in Toronto. So that's exciting. We'll try to get an interview with her. Next up was a band called Tully on Tully with a single called Stay. And they're also from Australia and have made the way here for the Canadian Music Week. So lots going on there. My favorite band, UMI, have made the trip over there too. I kind of wish I was in Toronto right now watching that. But no worries. I'm here doing this and I like doing this as well. So I'll be right back very soon with more from Stranded.
Donuts each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Okay, we're back here. This is a show called Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music and talk show. You can find us on Twitter at AusStranded and also online. The show blog is AusStrandedRadio.com. So now for something very different, a little interview that's completely unrelated to music, but it's close to my heart because my cousin Charlie Graydon is in town. She lives elsewhere. She lives in Europe currently, but she had a long career as a criminal lawyer in Alberta, and she's passed through town to have a launch for her book in Victoria. And I wanted to chat with her and get her thoughts down on the recording device, on the little Zoom that I brought to her hotel room in Richmond, which is close to the airport. And I want to play for this right now. And it's her talking about her book. It's called The Judgment Game. And it's an interesting book. And it has a lot of vignettes or short stories which the reader is asked to read and then decide on how they think they judge the situation. So some pretty grisly tales, fictional tales, but based on what you might find in a criminal court, I suppose. And anyways, I really enjoyed talking to Charlie. She's my cousin, and I wanted to do her this favor by interviewing her to get her thoughts about what she'd put all this work into, her debut book following her career as a criminal lawyer. So here we go. This is part one right now. Charlie Graydon talking about The Judgment Game. Okay, so I'm here speaking with Charlie Graydon. She is the author of a brand new book called The Judgment Game, a book on social commentary about situations that people can get themselves in the criminal justice system, and an ask for the reader to thoughtfully apply themselves to a number of scenarios. Charlie, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Matthew.
The Judgment Game, this book comes after a lengthy career of you working in the legal field. How has the work of your career inspired you to write this book?
Yes, thank you. My work as a lawyer and also my work as a legal academic. I was a lawyer in Alberta, and I was also an academic at several universities in New Zealand, in Alberta, and in Wales. And in all of those instances, this has inspired the book that I have written, The Judgment Game. The book is a book of fiction. It asks the reader to play an active role in making decisions. In essence, the reader is the decision maker. So I'm asking the reader to read a series of vignettes in the chapters of the book, and then to make decisions and use the information in the book. The reader doesn't need to have more information than is in the book, and then he or she makes the decisions based on the information.
It's very fair to the reader because, yeah, as you're saying, you don't need any prior
really experience of the law, even. You just have to be a thoughtful person to bring what you have, to bring your own judgment to the judgment game.
That's right. And so in that sense, I've stated that the reader, it's really a diary that the reader is it's the reader's own personal diary. As the reader reads through the stories, the reader then makes a decision what they think about the specific situation. So it's a quest, I've indicated, it's a quest for the self within the mystery of consciousness. And what I mean by that is it's the self, meaning the self of those people that you're reading about, the men and the women that you're reading about, and also as you make the decisions as the reader, it's also saying something about yourself. So it's a quest for the self. And when I say the mystery of consciousness, what I mean by that, and the philosophical basis for that, is that we don't know what is in the mind of other people. And so we are making judgments, we're making decisions based on where we come from with our background. So many people, as they read this book, they make completely different decisions. One person and the next person reads the same situation and says, I don't agree with what the first person said. This is the way that I feel it should be dealt with.
That's right. And the scenarios you've pictured in the book, they're not altogether pleasant. I mean, you're putting on characters that are based on what people might do out in the world, people who are desperate, doing certain acts. And we have to accept what we're reading. And yeah, as you say, make a decision. You can't just let it hang. You just have to make a judgment.
Right. Or you make, it's a judgment, or it's really a matter of making comments and making suggestions, because what the reader is being asked to do is reshape the criminal justice system in this fictitious country. I mean, we're not dealing with reality. This is fiction. And there's a fictitious country. The name of the country is Torsha. And in Torsha, it's a pretty evil country. There's a lot of avarice. There's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of sex. There's a lot of gambling. There's addictions, terrible addictions. It's a lot. The problems are grave. The problems are not fun. But for us, as the reader, it's a matter of saying, we can do something about these problems. Here's what I think we can do.
I put my new suit in the cleaners again. I took the first bus, I didn't look back. Lungs long blowing like a smokestack. Hair falling out as the wind blows through it. My horse ran second just like I knew it would. Overflowing ashtray. Yay. Oh yeah. Then the officer said, you better get a lawyer, son. You better get a real good one. You better get a lawyer, son. You better get a real good one. Get yourself a suit and tie, and get your hair cut way up high. Get yourself a lawyer, son. You're gonna need a real good one. I can walk all the way down the dirt track. I fell down, I got up, I turned around and then I walked back. I walked to the sea. I stood there and looked for a sign. It took time, but it came. I added up and took what was mine. Better get a
son. You better get a real good one. Get yourself a lawyer, son. You're gonna need a real good one. Don't drop the soap. Don't smoke no dope. Get yourself a lawyer, son. You're gonna need a good one to get you out of this one.
Keener's Car Wash is the first social enterprise delivering environmentally friendly mobile car washing in Canada, with all proceeds going towards homeless youth programs. Keener's Car Wash will be washing cars for free on Thursday, May 15th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., not far from Thunderbird Parkade. Check out keenerscarwash.ca for more details. Get your car washed for free and support at-risk youth on May 15th.
Welcome back. You're listening to Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music and Talk Show. And you just heard there The Cruel Sea with their classic Better Get a Lawyer from the Three-Legged Dog record. And I played that because it's fitting for the interview for this week. It's quite different. Cheryl Lee Graydon is actually a cousin of mine, and she's passing through town to... she's on her way to a book launch in Victoria for a book that she's written called The Judgment Game. And it's following a lengthy career as a criminal lawyer and academic. And it's her reflections. Well, it's more in story form, asking the reader really to reflect on what it means to be someone who's being asked to pass judgment on a criminal case. And it's an interesting read. And I spoke with Cheryl Lee at a hotel in Richmond here in BC just in the last week, and got her thoughts down on what her book is all about. So let's get into part two of this interview. This is with author Cheryl Lee Graydon talking about her book, The Judgment Game.
Given that you have the context of lengthy legal practice behind your mind when you were writing this, has the process of writing this given you a chance to reflect on the pros and cons of our current legal system? Because as you're saying, you're asking us to make a judgment on limited information, really, which I guess is often what happens for a judicial decision maker.
Right. When you say our own system, as I said, it's not a system I can compare with. It's not the system in a particular country that I can compare with, because the book of fiction is completely fiction. I created the law myself. And so in that sense, it seems similar to perhaps laws that you might read in the Commonwealth. But they are not from a particular country, as I've indicated. I've created them myself. And the laws that you use in the judgment game, you don't have to go beyond what is in the book. Now, you've asked about how it relates to present types of legal processes.
As you say, you can't know what's going on in the minds necessarily of everybody.
Right.
It's
a very good, you make a very good comment, because that is also what the book is about, is that we don't have all the information. And so often it says, do you have other comments? In the book it says, do you have other comments? The other comments perhaps are, you didn't give me enough information. I need to know this, 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 and this in order to make a decision. So that is what I'm asking the reader to also tell us, like, what is it that the decision maker needs to know? I mean, in legal situations, often the judge doesn't have all the information. So there is a chapter in the book that's called The Omnipotent Decision Maker. And what that chapter does is it provides more information than an ordinary judge in many legal situations would have. For example, there's a concept that's called solicitor-client privilege in many jurisdictions, and that means that what the client tells his or her lawyer can't be told to the judge. That's solicitor-client privilege. Now, in the omnipotent decision-maker chapter, we have situations where you hear what the client told his or her lawyer, and so that may have an influence on what you decide is the right thing to do with that particular scenario.
Mm. And wouldn't that be really helpful in real life for the particularly heinous crimes, the murders and things like that, where the defendant's lawyers are claiming insanity or something, or some sort of mental illness, when we really don't know unless we're privy to maybe some of these conversations? And as a society member, we want to know. We want to know if these are genuinely bad people who should be put away, or if they're people who had a brain malfunction at some point.
Right. I understand exactly what you're saying. And so, yes, it's very helpful. So as you read these stories and the ones that are the omnipotent decision maker, where you do have more information than an ordinary judge would normally have, that may or may not be helpful. So, I mean, there are very good reasons that the law has restrictions, because we want people to have the right to have a defense. We want them to have the right to have have a lawyer that will defend them in the criminal justice system. But again, it's the decision maker, it's the reader's choice when they read this. Was that a good thing that I knew this, or is it better I didn't know that?
Mm.
So again, I'm not making a judgment. That's the judgment that the reader makes. Did Ms. Gridden give me enough information? Do we have too little information? So that's what I'm asking the reader to please tell in their comments. Now, as I've said, in this book, it's almost like your personal diary. So if you purchase the book and you think, well, I'll read it and I'll give it to my friend, I'll fill in the answers and then I'll give it to my friend, probably not a good idea, because you're giving your friend your personal diary. What your thoughts are. And your friend may have, and maybe it's a good idea. Some people have said, we want to have a forum so that we can communicate with one another on what our decisions are in each of the scenarios. And yes, that may be very useful. However, it's still your book, your decisions, your particular with your particular background that you make those decisions. So I would say that a forum is an excellent opportunity to share surveys and forums.
It's good because people can make a choice. It's sort of like a practice space. You know, you don't have to feel like whatever you write is in concrete and you'll be judged in eternity for it. You are acting on limited information. You just have to make that decision, which is actually a good thing for us to learn, I guess.
And it also shows how difficult it is for the people in the judicial system, the judges. And this is not an easy job that a judge would have, making decisions, as you said, and as I've indicated in the book. You act on limited information. You only act on what was presented to you. You only act on what's presented to you in these stories. And a judge only acts on what is presented to him or her in the court.
The types of vignettes that you have in your story, you have a number of scenarios with different characters. Can you explain what they're like generally?
The first chapter, for example, deals with situations of, it's called Dancing with a Leopard, and it's situations of domestic abuse. And when I say Dancing with a Leopard, it's because people change their spots like a leopard. So you marry someone and you think everything's lovely, everything's perfect. Well, unfortunately, things don't work out that well. And so it ends up perhaps a situation where either the wife or the husband or the, you know, partners, male, female, it becomes abusive, perhaps verbal abuse, physical abuse. So those are the type of scenarios. Other scenarios deal with impaired driving. But in my book, impaired driving, to get your license back, you have to take a course, but you have to do more than that. You also have to allow TORSHA. The country has created a machine that reads people's minds. So in order to get your license back, you have to let the government read your mind. So it's a matter of, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
And Charlie, just before we go, I'm wondering if you could comment on the types of people who might be interested in reading your book, The Judgment Game.
Okay, people who are considering careers in law, people in the criminal justice system or who are involved in the social services system that relates to the criminal justice system, people in probation, but also just people.
So that's the voice of Cheryl Lee Graydon speaking about her book, The Judgment Game. And she's in this part of the world. She's heading to Victoria for a book launch. If you're listening online, she'll be launching her book at Chapters on the 12th of May. So thanks so much, Cheryl-Lee, for chatting. And we'll be right back. Speaking of judicial process, the reconciliation with First Nations in Canada, there's been a lot of litigation around that. A lot of decision makers have had to pass judgment on what terrible acts that have happened in the past. A positive part of what community radio has done is to produce a series of short radio clips for resonating reconciliation, where a number of commentators are speaking about what reconciliation means in Canada. So let's play Isabel Francis, a short grab of her interview from Resignating Reconciliation here on CRTR Radio.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kassler, my name is Gennarji O'Sullivan of the Tlaalitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Window, exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
My name is Isabel Francis, and my husband was Louis Francis, who died in 1971. And he went to school in Spanish. My husband was up there till he was 16, and his sister was up there till she was 16. She left 2 years before he did, and he had a younger sister and a younger brother that also went to school up there. He spoke about the conditions up there maybe once or twice, but he never wanted to talk about it. Because there were a lot of unpleasant things that were happening to him. He always said, don't ever forget how lucky you are that you were raised by your parents. When he came back at 16, he couldn't talk to his father. His father couldn't speak English and he couldn't speak Mohawk. So there was no togetherness there.
I hear that the mission of residential schools was to, quote-unquote, kill the Indian in the child. Mm-hmm. So that's...
Well, I think they did a pretty good job of that, but to some extent. But I think nobody can do that. I mean, it can't be done, not to make them forget. Look at the First World War, the Second World War, what the Germans and the Japanese did. They couldn't wipe out the good in the people.
His experience up there, would you say it was all bad, or were there...
Well, no. He always said there were some good priests up there. I don't mean to condemn every one of them. Just like in any situation, there's always one that pops out that is against the rules. The only thing I can't forget is that how did the people that were in there get away with something like that? Mm-hmm. One apology doesn't wipe out everything. There are certain things that stand in their mind and that they'll never forget. But that's the way it is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Grandma.
Oh, no problem.
I love you.
I love you too.
You have just heard At Window, exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to this shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
Okay, so we're just about out of time. Time for one more track. I should say, actually, Charlie Graydon, we just played that interview with her about the Judgment Game. You can find more information about the book at a website, www.charaleeg.com. And there'll be information there also about the book launches the 12th of May in Victoria at Chapters at 11:30 a.m. if you're in Victoria, BC. There's also some launches in Central Alberta, Red Deer, coming up, and one in Calgary. So that's www.charaleeg.com. And we're almost out of time. Great music always happening in the city of Vancouver every Friday night. One show at the Prop House, I've been told, there's a really great band called The Deep. They'll be playing tonight at the Prop House from about 8:30 p.m. That's just off Commercial Drive. I wish I had time to play a track from them. It'll have to be another show because I did want to leave you with a track from Polly. He's a brilliant local rocker, and he's playing tonight at Lanaloo's with some other bands. Let's see who's on the bill. Circus in Flames and Eddie D and the Sex Bombs. Paul Lee is his name, but he goes by the stage name Polly. Some great glam rock here for you. And then David Love Jones will be up tonight following me with African Rhythms. Here's Polly.
It's a messy hair, pick us up and brush us off. Our makeup doesn't look quite right. We'll try to get the story straight. The Nick is out of fake a talk. All messed up, ready to go. There's salvation in this old guitar. All we need is a place to go and a couple thousand watts. And if you ask, it's very nice. We wish you may, we wish you might. We'll hike the skirts another notch. All messed up, ready to go. All messed up, ready to go. All messed up, ready to go.
All messed up, ready to go.
passes are on
June
sale
18th
now.
To the
For
22nd,
more information,
annual
go to
SledIsland.com.
Featuring over 250 bands, films, artists, and comedians spread across 30-plus venues concentrated.
From June 18th to the 22nd, it's the 8th annual Sled Island Festival, featuring over 250 bands, films, artists, and comedians spread across 30-plus venues concentrated in the downtown core and surrounding areas of Calgary, Alberta. Featuring bands such as St. Vincent, Dan Deacon, Killer Mike, Rennie Wilson, and so much more. Passes are on sale now. For tickets and more information, go to SledIsland.com.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub. It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies. It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce. It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
I went to residential school, I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kasla. My name is Gennarji O'Sullivan of the Tlaalitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Window, exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
My name is Isabel Francis, and my husband was Louis Francis, who died in 1971. And he went to school in Spanish. My husband was up there till he was 16. And his sister was up there till she was 16. She left 2 years before he did, and he had a younger sister and a younger brother that also went to school up there. He spoke about the conditions up there maybe once or twice, but he never wanted to talk about it because there were a lot of unpleasant things that were happening to him. He always said, "Don't ever forget how lucky you are that you were raised by your parents." When he came back at 16, he couldn't talk to his father. His father couldn't speak English and he couldn't speak Mohawk. So there was no togetherness there.
I hear that the mission of residential schools was to quote unquote kill the Indian in the child. So that's...
Well, I think they did a pretty good job of that, but to some extent, but I think nobody can do that. I mean, it can't be done, not to make them forget. Look at the First World War, the Second World War, what the Germans and the Japanese did. They couldn't wipe out the good in the people.
His experience up there, would you say it was all bad, or were there...
Well, no, he always said, there were some good priests up there. I don't mean to condemn every one of them. Just like in any situation, there's always one that pops out that is against the rules. The only thing I can't forget is that how did the people that were in there get away with something like that? Mm-hmm. One apology doesn't wipe out everything. There are certain things that stand in their mind and that they'll never forget. But that's the way it is now. Mm-hmm.